Today, I'm very happy to have a very special guest, Charlie Cote. Charlie is a local, say, Rochester area poet. He is a clinical social worker in private practice and the author of Flying for the Window, which was published by Finishing Line Press in 2008. It's a book of poems about the loss of his firstborn son to cancer in 2005. Charlie teaches poetry at Writers and Books in Rochester, New York, and won their Big Pencil Award in 2014 as a teacher of adults. And he serves as the board chair for Melissa's Living Legacy Teen Cancer Foundation. So he's a really great guy. His most recent poems have been published in Ducts and Connotation Press, and forthcoming work will appear in Big City Lit. So there's a lot to talk about with Charlie. As you know, if you've been listening to the show, Lit Up is a show about the cross-section between writing and spirituality, in whatever way that you can think to approach it, how writing affects your growth as a human, as a soul, or however you want to define that, and how your soul and inspiration and the muse come back in and play into your development and ability to create powerful art. Charlie teaches writing. He is a writer, and he also is so, how do I put this? He's sort of a champion, I think, for the arts, especially for poetry. He goes to these different events around Rochester and does this really cool thing that's called Poetically Connect, where he actually writes people personalized poems. Off the bat, they offer him their favorite 5 words, and then a story from their lives in which they felt something. And he's been doing this. He did this last night for the Rochester Free Radio fundraiser. He's done this at the Visual Studies Workshop Pub Fair and probably some other places. But this is actually like people are really responding well to this. They love the poems that Charlie's writing, and I got to say, it's a very brave act to put yourself out there like that as a on-demand writer of poetry. So that's maybe where I'd like to start with Charlie, is a little bit about Poetically Connect and his approach to what it means to reach out and have these kind of intimate moments with strangers on the fly.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Great to have you here.
Let's start with Poetically Connect. It's interesting how that came about. I was asked to do poems on demand at the pub fair late last year, and I just said to Al Abinato, "Sure, I'll do it. I have no idea what I'm doing. I mean, I've written poetry since 1996, seriously, but I've never done this before."
Just want to give a little context for those who don't know. Al is he works at Writers and Books, which is a literary center in Rochester, New York, and that Charlie and I are both we both teach there, and we both received Big Pencil awards from them for teaching this year. Al, but Al, as well as being, I want to say, director of adult education at Writers and Books, also did something with the Visual Studies Workshop Pub Fair in terms of, I don't think he ran it, but he did a lot of setting up of the readings, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and he also, again, is the one who brought Charlie in to do this poetry on demand thing.
Yeah, he's the one that threw me in the pool.
Yes, okay, so please continue.
Yeah, so I showed up and there was a typewriter. I believe somebody you're well acquainted with brought the
Yes, it's
typewriter,
my boyfriend.
Dan.
Yeah.
In fact, if I might, I will read the poem that I wrote for Dan last night. Do you think he would mind?
I think he would love it
Okay.
secretly, though.
So we'll give a little context to that
Okay.
before I do. But Al asked me to be the poet in residence at the pub fair. I showed up, and it was somewhat magical, really. I was not sure what I was getting into, but being a therapist and being a poet, I think, prepared me well enough because I meet people all the time and I get them to tell me their story.
Right.
So I didn't have any real clear structure for how I would do this, but it happened intuitively
Right.
in the moment. And the first person that came up, I said, "Well, what do you want me to write you a poem about?" And they gave me a subject. And then I said, "Give me 5 words that you love the sound of that have nothing to do with that subject."
Right.
And then I'd say, "Tell me a little story that provoked some genuine feeling in you recently." And that was the prompt I would give myself. And then in some ways it became a collaboration between me and the person I would write a poem on demand for.
Right.
So they would be invested in it and I would be invested as well. So I started to do it. I jumped in and all of a sudden lines would come to me.
Yes.
And poems would appear on the page and I would hand them to folks and it was kind of fun. So last night I was happy to write a poem for your boyfriend, Dan. And so I said, Dan, what would you like me to write you a poem about? He said, space. I said, okay, give me five words. So he gave me words like scalloped, which I've never had that in a poem before. That was fun. I think he gave me the word iridescent, the word garbage, the word yellow, the word gossamer. And then he told me a story about walking home a few nights ago, and he felt like he could do anything. He felt full of hope. Yeah. I thought, oh, this is great. So this is for Dan, called Spacious. The night scalloped day. I'm walking home, clouds running by the moon, my stride iridescent. Even this uncollected garbage I've stored, this yellow dormancy, like gossamer, even my discarded dreams, there is nothing I can't be walking home to you.
I love that. So as someone who's been on the receiving end of one of Charlie's poems and also seen how Dan responds, and everyone who gets a poem from Charlie during this process loves what they get. And I was saying last night that I feel, having read these poems written by Charlie for my friends, even people Charlie does not know, you know, otherwise, that he seems to have, I say that he's got your number, you know, even, there's a level here in which Charlie is, of course, using his knowledge of his understanding of personality and humans and then the people he's coming to contact, I guess, on a rational level, but I truly think that there's also an empathic thing going on here where he's tapping into stuff in the person and in the way they see and sense the world that he couldn't know otherwise. And Charlie and I were talking about this earlier, and I'd like to explore, I guess, with Charlie what, if he agrees with me and if he can expand on how that works for him.
Well, for me, empathy is the art of being a therapist. And what I try to impart or help people explore in their own lives, not only deep listening to others, but deep listening to themselves. And for me, poetry is one of the best art forms for exploring a kind of deep listening.
Yeah.
At least for me, it is. And so what I like to do with a poem on demand is to get somebody to listen to themselves. What are words that you like the sound of? What words resonate with you? I mean, just asking that question alone helps somebody start to go inside and say, well, what do I love about certain words and why do I love them? And it's fun to watch them get very reflective, very quiet, and struggle a little bit too. Like, I don't know, only five? So they have to call up something in that moment. And then I'm sort of with them while they're doing that, and I'm listening and I'm paying attention. And then they tell me a little story that has some feeling in it. And then I just follow my intuition and I follow my own interest and, you know, see what those words might suggest. I mean, words exist for a reason.
Yes.
They reflect certain ideas and feelings.
Right.
And so, I'm really interested in words and their denotative meanings, but maybe more interested in their connotative meanings and then how they sort of rub up against each other. And, you know, what I like about poetry is finding ideas, words, images that maybe on the surface don't seem to go together, but when you put them together, they take these leaps.
Right.
And you discover something that you didn't know that you knew. So you get both something unexpected or surprising, but something that's inevitable too.
Absolutely.
So when you get that inevitability, you know, you have this feeling of awe, like, wow, that's beyond us or me. There's something bigger here going on.
Right.
Yeah, it's a great mystery to me. I love that.
It is. And the writing prompt is something I love. And I used it today with my teen writers. And I found out that they had great results with the same prompt. When you choose five words that you like or love and an experience, recent experience where you had genuine feeling, and you use them to... So there's a feeling that you're bringing in, and then these five words are sort of your parameters. They have to be in there somewhere. And as we were saying, talking about earlier, instead of approaching a poem as, you know, with this completely wide open space, the parameters actually allow you to focus on how these words connect, the container they create, and if there are words that are disparate and don't necessarily have clear connection to the subject matter, like you were saying, they create a tension. Mm-hmm. And that tension and that disparity actually can lead to surprises and discoveries in thinking. So a lot of times poets and writers, we get stuck because we're saying the same thing over and over again. We're using the same words and the same ideas. But coming with a prompt like this allows discovery. You know,
and transformation.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that I enjoy the most about poetry, you know, being able to transform words in combination to something greater than that one particular word.
Yeah.
You know, and you discover new meanings.
Right, right. Things will come up between the lines and between the words that, yeah, exactly, that you couldn't have even have foreseen. Okay, so... If you would like to have Charlie come and do this amazing thing for your event, I just want to give a little plug for Poetically Connect. This includes weddings, any kind of, I guess, fair or event.
Right.
This would be great.
Social
gatherings. Mm-hmm. You do this with poet Sarah Freely.
Yes.
And you're looking at possibly having tabling at local Rochester festivals, maybe coming.
We're open
coming
to
up.
That, sure.
Okay. I think this would be great at the Clothesline Arts Fair.
And of course, we have manual typewriters, which is really
yes.
cool.
That's a big part of it, is the typewriter. Yes.
There's something interesting about composing on a typewriter.
Right.
Because normally I would compose with a pen and a notebook.
Right.
But composing on a typewriter, there's a sense of, you know, I only get one shot at this.
Yes, it's like radio.
Yeah, we only get one shot at this. There's no whiteout for this.
Exactly. Yeah. And the typewriter, yeah, it's part of the spectacle. It's part of the romance of what you're doing. And it's interesting. If you had a laptop, you'd have to have a laptop and printer set up. It'd be very cumbersome
right.
to give people their pages. But you just clickety-clack, pull it out, and send it them on their way with
right.
their poem.
And Dan was gracious enough to let me take a picture of the poem.
Yes.
Yeah. So in some ways, it's something that I write and give away.
Right.
Most of the poems I don't save. Every so often, I'll ask permission to take a picture of one because I might be particularly fond of that one.
Yeah.
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 There's something about Dan's
poem
that resonated with me, which I liked.
It was a very complete poem. It's as if it was maybe his understanding of the moment was so clear that you could get a clear sense of it too.
Yeah. And I like the idea of putting the word garbage in a poem and making it sound beautiful, which I was a little challenged by that,
yeah.
but it was fun.
I like the
imagery of, you know, looking at garbage in a whole new light, because we carry a lot of garbage around in our heads all the time.
Yes.
And for me, poetry is a way of sifting through.
Yeah.
And maybe redeeming or finding value in what might look like garbage but really isn't garbage.
So this perfect segue to the story of you as a poet, which I'll let you obviously tell it, but just to kind of give it some context, you started taking poetry classes in 1996, correct?
Yes.
So you're not were you in your 20s?
I'm not going to
okay,
say.
Okay, okay. But the point is...
I'm 54 now,
okay.
So you do that.
The point is that Charlie's one of these people who has become a well-liked and successful poet, but didn't go to school as an English major, you know, didn't do this since he was a teenager, you know. And I think that's very actually inspiring. There's this idea that you can start an art form in your 20s, 30s, 40s, and still do something wonderful with it.
You know? I believe I was 36 at the time.
Wow. There you go.
Yeah.
That's old. I'm going to take up the banjo. And by the time I'm Charlie's age, I'll be pretty good.
Oh, nice.
So you started taking a class in 1996, and would you tell the rest of
sure.
the progression?
Well, I was working as a therapist, pretty new to the profession. Not new to work, but new to being a clinical social worker. And it was difficult work. I mean, raising a young family, being not newly married, but fairly new to the marriage. All of that stress, plus people are coming and sharing their stories, their suffering, and I'm absorbing all of that and trying to manage my own life, trying to figure out who I am. I needed some outlet, some way to express my feelings. But when I was coming through school, high school, college, I never thought that I was much of a writer. So I always had a fear about writing. Mm. And I went on a professional retreat with some colleagues, and we were given a journaling assignment. And the thought of writing an essay or writing free form, for some reason, scared me. I don't know why. It's irrational. But the thought of maybe putting something in poetic form appealed to me intuitively. I don't know why. And so I wrote something. It wasn't very good, but it was in lines.
Yeah.
And for some reason, writing in lines maybe made a little container for me. I don't know why. I didn't know what that was all about. I know more about it now, but I didn't know then what that was all about. But it gave me great satisfaction. I think I even cried.
Mm.
You know, so there was a real emotional connection to this, that I had found something important.
Mm.
And I wanted to pursue it. And that's what led me to take the class at Writers and Books. And then, you know, I started writing crude poems. I don't think I remember many of them, although I did have some of those early poems published.
Yeah.
Mostly through the help of that writing group, which was really, really generous. So that was exciting to get some early success as a writer.
That's very
and validation. And then that, you know, that gave me encouragement to go further. After a while, I think I lost a little momentum. I realized how hard it is to write poetry, although, you know, I was reading some things about poetic craft and whatnot. But then life happens, and I kind of drifted a little bit. And then in 2003, 2004, my 16-year-old son was diagnosed with cancer, melanoma, which you can imagine just devastated all of us. And so then, you know, the next year and a half or so, we were walking through his treatment. And sadly, in 2005, he passed away. But all through his illness, he was dedicated to his craft as a musician. He was a lead singer for a band. He played bass. And he kept a notebook of song lyrics, which we found after he died, which blew us away. In fact, we found this quote in his journal, which I think for me is, you could sort of take it as a life mission in some ways. Here's what he wrote. Certainty is the cage that keeps us safe from curiosity.
Hmm.
I've been released from the cage. I'm the songbird, and I'm flying for the window. I know it's closed, but I plan on breaking through. And that was incredibly inspirational. And actually, out of that quote, I got the title for the book of poems that was published in 2008, poems that were dedicated to honoring his life and to working through the grief of losing him.
Yes.
And the collection is called Flying for the Window.
And if people wanted to find the book, is it on Amazon?
I think it is on Amazon. You probably could get it directly from Finishing Line Press as well.
Okay.
I have some copies too, so if you wanted to email me.
And we'll give that at the end of the show, absolutely.
Sure.
That's Flying Through the Window.
For the Window.
For the Window, sorry. Flying For the Window.
Yeah.
By Charlie Cote.
Yeah, which is interesting. You know, flying for the window,
right.
Not through the window.
Yeah, you're not there yet.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And the other, I guess, cool coincidence, maybe it wasn't a coincidence after all, was the cover art for that.
Yeah.
My wife and I were walking through Cobbs Hill Park, and there are these hollowed out buildings with windows that have steel bars on them. And I took a picture of one of them, and it looked like a birdcage, but it also looked like a jail cell.
Right.
And so my wife created this graphic on the cover, which had that picture, and it had a picture of a bird that was flying for the window. And in some ways, it represented maybe his spirit, you know, being trapped in his body, and then maybe
yes.
just before it was released
yes.
beyond that. So it was kind of sent shivers through our
I definitely
spine,
felt
you know?
Very resonant.
Yeah.
There's a lot of resonance. And considering, yeah, what that means when you lose certainty, not that there is any real certainty in life, but when you're facing death,
right.
you know, what that means, the profundity of what he was saying as an analogy.
His death really did change our world in significant ways, in my world, my spiritual life. Because before that, I think I probably was moving towards certainty or trying to figure things out, you know, with certain ideas about, you know, who's God, what's right, what's wrong, all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Very active in church life and church ministry. And after he died, boy, mostly questions, you know. But what I took from his quote was to move toward curiosity, not move towards bitterness or despair,
right?
But to stay open. And I decided that I was going to really devote myself to getting better as a poet, you know, to honor him that way, and to go through my own process of curiosity and discovery and find out more about who I am and, you know, what this world's all about.
And the process of writing during those years that followed helped you work through the grief.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Still.
Right.
Right.
Right. And helps you work through the grief, and then also has become as part of your spiritual life as well,
mm-hmm.
the writing.
Right.
Wow. That's such a profound thing. And now you give back. You work with young adult cancer survivors and
Teen cancer survivors, yeah.
Yes. So young adult means, in this context, teenagers?
Well, teenagers and young adults up to the age of 30, 35, I think.
Oh, okay, mm-hmm. sure.
So we work with young adults and teenagers who, you know, were diagnosed from age 13, you know, up through their young adulthood. And so we provide programs and services to help improve the quality of life, no matter what part of the journey that those young people are on in their cancer experience.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And what is the name of this program again?
Well, the name of the organization is Melissa's Living Legacy Teen Cancer Foundation. And I've been really honored to be part of that on the board, but also as a volunteer. And the thing that I'm really passionate about is doing these creative wellness seminars or workshops with the young adults and with the teens.
Can you talk a little bit more about those?
Yeah. So last week I met with a group of 8 young adult cancer survivors, and we were talking about balance. And I talked to them about trying to find balance between 2 aspects of self. One would be strength, and the other would be goodness. And so when you have good strength in your life, you deeply value your own worth. Or you have a deeply held belief in your own worth.
Yeah.
When your goodness is strong, you have a deeply held belief in the value of others.
Yes.
And so we talked about that, and then I had them write persona poems. And in this case, what that means is they were going to create a character out of an inanimate object and then speak in the voice of that object. And so I led them through an exercise on how they might identify what that object was,
yeah.
and then how they might personify it or give it human attributes. But what was really fun about this is they would give themselves permission, because in some ways they're not writing about themselves, but they're writing about an object which is outside of themselves, that they actually might say more or discover more. And so that in fact happened.
Right.
Yeah. One young woman in particular was identifying with a recipe. So that was the object, a recipe.
Mm-hmm.
And she was identifying with the notion that a lot of recipes are discovered by accident.
Hmm.
And then was comparing that to her own experience of her cancer being discovered by accident. And she used to hate that notion that this was an accident. But by writing this poem, I think it was somewhat redemptive for her because she realized maybe that's not so bad after all.
Right.
You know, it was really, really a beautiful moment.
That's really resonant with me because that is, seems to be my mantra lately. And it's what this show is about also is what we call accidents. Like whether you're cooking or writing a poem or writing a play or launching a radio show, everything that seems to, you're trying to control all of it, but the things that you let go can often turn out better
right.
than otherwise. And what I love about, you know, the population you're working with is, you know, people who have survived something so scary,
mm-hmm.
you know, and who are, they're alive, they're survivors, but they have a lot to process. And you're offering them poetry as a way to, I like the way you said it, as a container for chaotic energies. This
right.
is how you perceive energy, I mean mm-hmm. poetry. And I think this is another thing I want to get out there is that poetry is not just this academic study and it's not something that that only certain elite people can do. It is absolutely something that we can use to understand and cope with and make sense of our lives, our own lives, and all the chaotic things going on in our heads.
And find connection with other lives as well.
Right.
So, you know, when you go back to this concept of empathy, not only empathy for yourself or your own issues, but also seeing maybe a universality in that, a connection to other people, and it really builds community in some ways.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You did have a poem of your own, right?
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to share it with us?
Yeah. Actually, I'd like to share something that I've been doing lately, which is kind of intriguing to me. I'll do some inspirational reading of some kind, and it almost doesn't matter what it is, as long as it gets me to a place of meditation
mm-hmm.
or something that I can meditate on, then I'll try to spend some time in reflection meditation. And then I write for, you know, maybe 10 or 15 minutes. The whole idea is to just try to write every day.
Mm.
And what I've been trying to do is link up the writing I did the day before with the writing that I do today
yeah.
by having the last line of yesterday be the first line for today. So I thought maybe I'd read some of those.
I would love that.
They're pretty raw. I mean, I haven't edited any of these, but they come out of a place of maybe meditation or deep reflection. You know, maybe
I love that they're raw. That means we're the first ones hearing them.
Okay, so I'll just jump in the middle.
Sure.
This would have been... well, we'll see. This was on November 24th. And you, behind a door you haven't opened, imagining the light, the welcome, or is it dark? The choice heavy with hesitation. Will you leave behind a better version of this longing that brought you on a beggar's errand, standing on a street corner, cardboard sign in hand, cold and carless? So then the next day, on the 25th, cardboard sign in hand, cold and carless. Where are the jobs I imagine losing? The hand I don't extend to my neighbor. There are walls I erect that keep me locked inside. The floor tiles in St. Peter's Basilica are covered with a wall of water. To see them, you walk a makeshift plank. This sign lets you know where to stand, your corner in a round world. I am homeless and begging for change. What I've said again and again for a pittance of attention. Where is my wrecking ball, my demolition? Here is my head, here's my hand held in a tight fist, one small coin concealed. Help me pry it loose and toss it to the street.
All right. If you would like to be in touch with Charlie, you can email him at ccote, that's ccote, at rochester.rr.com. If you'd like to be in touch with me, I'm at Nina, that's N-I-N-A, at dreamyourbook.com. And thank you for listening to Lit Up.